Hello and welcome to Escape Artists, a podcast about music, film and other escapist art forms with me, your host, Danny Randon. This is episode number 3, and if you are a new listener to Escape Artists, then welcome, grab a pew, thank you for being here today. And if you're a returning listener, then thank you as well. If you are in the latter camp, then you might be wondering, hey, Danny, why is it taking you nearly 6 fucking months to release a new episode of this podcast? And hey, I appreciate you for returning after such a long break so early into the existence of this podcast. It has indeed been a minute since episode number 2. If you haven't listened to that yet, it's a wicked chat with Dave and Dev from the band Delta Sleep about the equally wicked album that they put out last year called Spring Island. And while you're at it, why not check out the first bumper episode of the podcast, which I did with Justine and Sammy from Employed to Serve and Church Road Records and a countless number of side projects that they have on the go. Both of those were really, really fun to record, and you know, I received some really lovely words from people about those episodes, but I also picked probably the worst time ever to launch a new podcast. Life got super busy. I had loads of shit on, ultimately all good shit, or at least most of it good shit anyway. And I didn't have the time or the kind of energy to keep it going. So I just had to step back, wait for the right moment to get it going again. And here we are. This may be an even worse time. Life is still busy, but there's some really awesome things happening in the world of music and film and all mediums of escapist art at the moment, and I couldn't not get back in front of the mic to talk about some of it. And that leads me quite nicely onto what I'll be talking about on the podcast and who I'll be talking about it with. For episode number 3, much like the 2 episodes prior, I'm delighted to be joined by, in my opinion, and I know I'm not alone, one of the best bands in British alternative music at the moment. That band's name is Puppy. They are a trio from London. They've been around for a few years now. I think, like a lot of people, I first heard of them when they released their incredible sophomore EP, which was rather fittingly titled Volume 2 back in 2016. They were kind of coming up as part of this astonishing new wave of Brit rock, I guess you can call it, alongside the likes of Creeper and Milk Teeth and Black Peaks and Muncie Girls and so many other great bands. It was such an exciting time for music, and Puppy were doing some of the most interesting stuff amongst all of those bands, taking cues from everyone from Smashing Pumpkins and Deftones to Alice in Chains and Ghost. And yeah, it was a real sonic soup, but also sounded like none of those bands. And, you know, instead they were just doing something really original and really fucking rad. It's a shame a fair few of the bands from that Brit rock explosion seem to have disappeared over time. You know, we haven't got Milk Teeth anymore, we haven't got Black Peaks anymore, but Puppy are thankfully still around, and they put out an incredible debut full-length album called The Goat in 2019, before following that swiftly with a really great third EP, again appropriately titled 3. And now they're back. They're back with a new album, which has the brilliant title Pure Evil. It comes out 6th of May, which, if you are listening to this podcast on the day I'm putting it out, is this coming Friday. It's coming out on Rude Records. It's their first release as part of their roster. It's a record label that have been putting out some really wicked stuff over the last couple of years. Now, I've been lucky enough to get a sneaky listen, or 7, of this new record from Puppy. And let me tell you, it is just one of the most enjoyable listening experiences that I think you'll have all year. People who have not been following Puppy up till this point, now is your moment to get on board. And people who have been, I mean, you really, really won't be disappointed with Pure Evil. So yeah, I've heard the album, and I'd seen a bunch of the music videos and the visuals that they put out in the lead up to the album's release. You know, Puppy have this track record at this point of making really entertaining, often hilarious, often bewildering visuals. Their social media game is really strong as well. And that trend continues. with Pure Evil. So I just had to sit down with the guys. I had to pick their brains about some of it. And I was fortunately granted an audience with all three members of the band. So that's lead singer and guitarist John Norton, drummer Billy Howard, and bassist Will Michael. They all dialed in from their respective evil lairs. I'd spoken to the band before in various capacities, but it's been a little while, so it was great to catch up with them and talk about many a thing, often veering off on some tangents, but that's how we like it on Escape Artists. Quick side note before we get stuck in, I'm recording this before I've actually recorded or edited the audio, I should say. We did record this via Zoom, and I think I was sat a bit too close to my mic with the gain turned up, just a wee bit too high, so I might sound a little bit peaky, but I will do everything in my power at least to make this podcast at the very least listenable, and I hope that doesn't ruin your listening experience today. So let's do it. Episode 3 of Escape Artists with Puppy, and you'll hear me chatting to Jock, Billy and Will right after we hear a clip from one of the singles from their new album, Pure Evil. This is The Kiss. So Puppy's new album is called Pure Evil, and it's coming out on the 6th of May through Rude Records. Joining me now are the three wonderful individuals behind the record, who I hope are going to be giving me more of the pure and less of the evil, and certainly none of the rude today.
Very good, very good.
You've been warned. I'll introduce you individually on guitars and vocals. Jock Norton, welcome, sir.
Hello, Danny.
And on drums, we have Billy Howard. Greetings.
How are you, man? I'm going to be taking responsibility for all the evil content today.
Okay, good to know. Designated evil one. Yeah. And then also joining us down the line on lead bass and vocals, we have Will Michael. Salutations to you, sir.
Hi, Danny. How are you? Lead bass. And rhythm bass, actually. I play both.
All right, cool.
How does he do them both? It's so, I never understand that.
Exactly. We're going to get a lead bass player and a rhythm player, but Will manages to do them both at the same time, which is pretty astonishing, really.
Is it ever going to be like Spinal Tap, where you're all playing the bass at one point?
We tried all playing guitar at one point for our, for one. We had a song on our second EP called Here at Home. And it's got like, it's just a clean guitar with like a harmony lead guitar part. And for a very early gig, we tried having Willie and Billy both playing guitar with me on stage. Like, we were all stood in the line playing guitars. We were like, this is going to look amazing. But then we forgot to tune one of the guitars before we started playing it. So there's this huge buildup. Like, the crowd were like into it, and they came out like, wow, like for the first note. And it was just like, it sounded absolutely dreadful.
I think the main issue really for me and Will was that Jock couldn't keep up with our treading.
That was it.
Behind a little bit, and we felt bad for him really. So we decided never to do it again because it really damaged his confidence seeing us shredding in that way.
Yeah. We made him look very foolish that day.
They're on stage going like, "What the fuck are you doing?"
Yeah.
Congratulations on Pure Evil. It's a cracking record. Am I right in thinking that Pure Evil was a title that you kind of settled on long before you had actually written or kind of recorded much of the album?
Once it started to come together, we did. Like, yeah, there was actually a song title that we had kicking around for something that didn't really work, but we just loved the. It was just such a dumb name. We thought it was cool. And then we're like, oh, imagine the album was called that. And we did that. And then I think Billy pointed out that Because I just liked it because it was, I was like, yeah, that's metal as fuck. And then Billy was like, actually, it's really nice because it, the dichotomy of the two words, you know, pure and evil, that summed up, I think, the band generally quite well, you know, the kind of mix between the kind of like lighter, poppier stuff that we enjoy combined with, you know, heavier moments. And then I think by the time, like once we'd kind of acknowledged that, and it came time to sequence the tracks and all this stuff and settle on what was going to be in the album, that definitely informed the process a bit, I think.
I think having that as a bit of a conceptual framework kind of really, definitely informed the way we put everything together. I think it was quite fun making this record because I think we lent into using maybe slightly more dynamic sounds. There's quite a lot of different things that we've chucked on there. And I think there was a point at which we just like embraced that slightly higgledy-piggledy aspect of it and trusted the process that it would come together. Yeah, pure
easy. The album was going to be called Higgledy-Piggledy at one point, but it didn't quite have the same ring to it, so we had to change that.
Yeah,
it still hurts.
Yeah,
it really still hurts.
We did the first session of that in a giant shoe, like that woman in the nursery rhyme, the Higgledy-Piggledy house person.
Was that the one where she swallowed a fly as well?
Yeah, man, yeah. That was really sad for everyone involved.
I believe that was a different rhyme, actually. Old lady swallowed the fly is different from the old lady lived in a shoe. There was a lot of old ladies about back in the day just getting up to all sorts of nonsense. And there was several songs written about it.
Maybe it was
she
swallowed
a spider to catch the fly.
Yeah, and then it ends up with her swallowing I think it gets up to horse, and then she dies. But in fairness, for a woman with like, you know, several animals inside of her body already at that point, I think she had a good run.
Yeah, it almost turns into like some body horror stuff after.
Yeah,
a while,
it gets quite dark. It? Yeah, imagine a woman who's eaten a live cat, dog, mouse. Yeah, it's fucking pretty wild. Pretty wild story.
It's like something.
The chorus is always like, I don't know why she swallowed the fly. Perhaps she'll die. Foreshadow that she will die all the way.
Yeah,
through.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm
surprised Tim Burton hasn't done a live action of that.
Helena Bonham Carter going full method, putting on.
Yeah.
Turning up to the set like fucking Marlon Brando. She actually eats a horse for the thing.
Yeah.
Did you, it's kind of related. Did you guys see the pictures of Danny Elfman recently at at Coachella?
Topless with a mane of red hair.
Yeah. Just looking ripped.
Yeah. He looks absolutely insane. It's not what I expected at all. Like arms aloft just the entire time, kind of like screaming the words to every one of his songs. Yeah, with this kind of like tribal tattoo vibe. Yeah, wow, hell of a surprise.
Sick tribal, bro.
He's got John Freese playing drums for him, the guy who was in Nine Inch Nails and Perfect Circle and Guns N' Roses.
Fucking way.
And now Danny Elfman, he's added that to his CV, which I think is pretty great.
That's one hell of a CV.
Yeah.
Like, what songs was he playing?
All the hits. Fucking The Simpsons.
He sings all the voices in The Nightmare Before Christmas, doesn't he? He's the lead.
Well, he's Jack Skellington in Nightmare Before Christmas. So he's singing fucking This Is Halloween and shit like that.
Wow.
Does that song make sense out of season? You can't sing This Is Halloween in the spring.
Oh, yeah. But then he's going into the Simpsons theme. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not like that's the point at which people go, hang on a second. Yeah. It's not Halloween.
Greenfield.
Yeah.
There's no monorail around here. Yeah.
I wonder if did he write the songs like monorail? Did they get him in for the smaller works as well? Or does he?
I don't believe so.
Man?
Yeah.
There's not like wonky strings in it going like.
Yeah. Going back to Pure Evil, not featuring Danny Elfman, but maybe a future collaboration in the works.
Remixes in the works, baby. Remix.
Yeah. I do agree. I think, you know, it's got some of the heaviest stuff that we've ever heard from you guys. I mean, from the off, the opening track, Shining Star, you know, is like doomy as fuck. I love it. And Spellbound around the middle of the album goes into like some proper crossover thrash. That hit hard when I first heard it. But it's also got some of the most kind of euphoric stuff you've done yet. Take a single like The Kiss, for example. And, you know, I don't say this lightly. It wouldn't sound out of place on, you know, Siamese Dream or something.
Yeah, for sure.
Flitting between the two extremes on the spectrum that is, I guess, the puppy sound Was that quite an easy balance to nail?
No.
No, I don't think so. I don't know. It's weird. Like, I think the way we recorded it very much informed like how it ended up, because we, you know, obviously happened all during lockdown. And we ended up just for kind of to kind of secure us being able to work on stuff and have a project, like we converted our rehearsal studio into a recording studio and decided to just kind of do it ourselves. Like, it was not something we had much experience doing, but we tried to book studios and stuff and they were falling through because of, you know, lockdowns and COVID, people getting sick and studios shutting down, and it was just kind of like chaos. And then obviously beyond that, you know, like it was pretty risky. So we just kind of created our own little bubble and just figured out how to do stuff ourselves. And that afforded us, I think, a bit more room to just try throwing stuff at the wall and seeing kind of what stuck, I guess.
I think in previous outings to record, we've been on studio time that was kind of expensive and time-based, I guess. I seem to remember tracking most of the drums for the Goat, like, I guess in total, like a day or two. Obviously, it was split over a few different sessions, but we were always quite fraught in how we worked. And that has its benefit. But I think that also maybe affects the way that you put the work together. But I think with this, it was a totally different approach because there weren't any deadlines in the same way. And maybe you see that in the shape that the album takes, in so much as, yeah, we were just able to explore different avenues a little bit.
We were able to try stuff that maybe, I think before we'd have to be so sure of something, and like there'd be things if there was a tiny bit of us that like wasn't 100% sure how something would turn out, we wouldn't record it because we were on such a tight deadline. And actually for this, it was really cool actually, because sometimes we'd record stuff and it always happens, you record songs that don't work, but this time the opposite sort of happened, where there were songs that we were like, well, let's just try it, let's just see what it sounds like, you know, in the studio, and it would sound, you know, great. Some of my favorite songs on the album kind of started from that place, you know. So it was cool.
I think everything changed when Danny Elfman came down and brought his xylophone. That really just transformed it.
Standing in the middle of our studio with no shirt on, screaming.
Putting you all to shame with his sick tribals.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He just kept saying, "Do you know how much money I've made from the Simpsons music alone?" And we kept saying, we can imagine it's a lot, but we don't really know. But he wouldn't tell us. He just kept repeating it.
Yeah. That's actually what his tribal tattoos mean.
Yeah, he got a Maori shaman to translate that seven figure.
Exactly, yeah. Pure gold, baby.
So you guys were afforded the luxury of having a bit more time in the studio to jam things out a little bit more, because it certainly comes across, you know. I think there are moments on the album where you guys sound more kind of fluid than ever, and I think that that's something of a continuation from the 3 EP. It started to just feel, you know, just start to feel a little bit looser, and were there a lot of songs kind of born out of that more kind of jam driven approach, I guess?
I don't know if there were songs born out of the like a kind of jam approach. I think there was certainly maybe because of the, like I said, because of the fact that we were just able to record things and like see how they sounded, there was certainly like, it allowed us to do things like for instance, like Hear My Word, which is like a really kind of like quiet, like it's almost like it's like halfway between a song and an interlude, I guess. It's like a kind of like a little just over a minute piece of music that kind of breaks up the album nicely. But that was a song that we were like, you know, we need to flesh this out, we need it to be like go really big at some point, we need it to, like, a lot of the stuff that I think we'd usually worry about if we were in the studio recording it, we'd want it to jump around the entire like puppy mood board and build to a bigger place, all this stuff like that. Again, I think it was Billy was like, let's just do it like this, like it sounds nice, let's like not worry about it too much, just record it. And we just did that version of it, the kind of short moodier version, and it just, again, it worked super well. We were just really happy with it. And I think, like, yeah, allowing stuff to, not worrying as much about every song needing to encapsulate every aspect of our band, I think was quite a good like place to get to on this. Whereas before, not that it was a negative thing, but like if I look back at the Goat, for instance, we'd get halfway through a song and be like, okay, so now we need, you know, there hasn't been a kind of medley bit yet, we've got to throw a medley bit in there, we've got to do this, we've got to do that. And yeah, with this one, I think we let each song do its own thing a bit more, let it breathe, because we knew it was going to sit next to others.
I think also as well, we produced this one ourselves. It wasn't just recording it ourselves, which is obviously a real challenge, but we were without any real external influence. And I think we've been lucky in the past to work with really good producers and really exciting people. But I think immediately when there's someone kind of external to the group there, I think they're trying to get a handle on what it is you're trying to do. And they maybe don't want to be left with some kind of convoluted stuff that they maybe can't get their teeth into or understand when it comes to doing edits or mixing it or whatever the next stage is. And I think maybe what's quite liberating about producing it yourself is that you kind of take on board that there are bound to be mistakes and things that don't quite work. But I think because it's you're also in a position then to try and fix it or play around with that later. And I think sometimes it's the mistakes or the little fuck-ups that can maybe be the spark of another thing or another idea. And I think in most creative processes, it can be really useful to allow there to be these. I mean, we actually ended up having to re-record a few songs because we'd fucked up. That's fine.
Literally, yeah.
And that was like annoying.
We'd like to get through the whole song and then realize, like, fuck, those drums are like, they speed up at one point and we'd have to go all the way back to the beginning. So it was like, it was literally, there was so much trial and error. Yeah. But I feel like, I mean, we feel proud of the record anyway, but the fact that we actually made it, like, that was our, you know, some people took up knitting or whatever during lockdown. Our one was trying to record an album and we did it. Like, I'm super proud of the fact that we did it. And it was a slog sometimes, but, you know, we got through it.
Rock.
Yeah, we took up rock and roll. Yeah.
Stick that up your banana bread, you losers.
I want to do another quiz.
I mean, I could not talk to you guys today about some of the visual accompaniments to the album as well, starting with the overall aesthetic of the album, the kind of epic conquest on the album artwork, where the goat kind of went down the route of those more kind of esoteric visuals. Pure Evil definitely has more of like a Dungeons and Dragons vibe. Are any of you actually proud dungeon masters?
I mean, I'm not a dungeon master, but I've got a pretty powerful bard that I like to wheel out occasionally. I haven't made the leap to DM yet, but I don't know, maybe one day. Once the album promo is done, I'll have a bit more time in my hands.
Yeah, to slip in.
You are a tabletop gamer as well, though.
Yeah, you know, I game with some tabletops from time to time.
You're a tabletop dancer as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I do it all. Give me a tabletop. I'll figure out something to do with it.
I mean, that aesthetic no doubt kind of trickled through, I say just a little bit, into the video for And Watched It Glow, which is, I mean, it's just bonkers. Tell us a little bit about the making of that video, because that just looked like so much fun.
Well, that's
looks can be deceiving, Danny.
My mum lives in a very remote part of Wales in Snowdonia, and she was going away for a few days and we suddenly needed a video. So I think we made the decision fairly early to go down there. There's lots of like ruined ruined castles, but they're not that grand, like ruined barns.
And a bit of a wall.
And I want to say waterfalls, but they're probably streams.
Babbling Brooks.
There you go. Yeah. Is there a band called that? That's quite a good name for a kind of like nature themed rock
I'm
band,
writing it
like
down.
A doom band.
I'm writing
the
it
Babbling
down.
Brooks. Mm. That's good. Sorry, Bill.
That's okay. I can't really remember where we're gonna go from there. You know, it was intermittently very fun, but it was also fucking freezing, and we had so little light because it was January that we would waking up at like 5. I remember we started shooting Jock in his Knight's outfit, which we'd rented from a costume shop in Dalston, like only a few days before. And basically, because it was so cold, like you were wearing metal gloves. What's the correct term for that?
The gauntlets.
Gauntlets, yeah. Jock's gauntlets were becoming so cold.
Because I had like it's like the bit of, what's it called? Like the bit of chainmail that one wears over your head.
Coif. You had a chainmail coif.
Yeah. And I was just wearing it straight on my bald head. And I didn't really, we didn't consider how cold it was and how metal tends to do whatever, you know, the temperature's doing. So I was stood there at 5 a.m. on this rock with my, like, literally my head was like in pain, holding this flag going like, fucking film me, fucking go. And I was waving the flag, like angrily screaming the lyrics. My head froze.
Jocks, yeah, that was I'll take off this gauntlet and challenge you to a duel.
Yeah, exactly. I end up throwing the flag at Billy at one point, I think.
Yeah, to be fair, Jock starts most days waving a flag, shouting, fucking film me. Just walking down the street. I dare you! The flag's just got a picture of his butt on it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd love to see a blooper reel from that shoot. Was there anything that you decided, you know what, maybe this is just a bit too far this time round?
We must have shot like, fuck, I don't know, 5 hours of footage. Mm. There were whole setups that were actually really good that we didn't use that looked really nice. But yeah, some of it was just a bit too absurd. I think there was a whole bit with Jock with a bunch of roses that he was throwing one by one in towards camera. That was great, actually. I don't know why we didn't
use that. Oh, did we never use that? We
never used that. There was a few other bits where I was like, shit, we never even got around to that. There was a bit where Danny Elfman turned up and he was his chef and shouting something about Edward Scissorhands. And that never made the final cut either because his lawyers wouldn't allow it. But that's probably the best thing we've ever shot. That was a bloopers reel at some point. Soundtracked exclusively by Xylophone.
It'll make some fantastic meme content, I'm sure, later on down the line.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I know Will and Billy in particular, you've both been heavily involved with the visuals for Puppy, helming the kind of majority, if not all, of your music videos up to this point. But
pretty much, yeah.
You've also kind of collaborated this time around with Jacek Szmarz doing this sort of crazy animation on the video for The Kiss. Mm. How have you found that collaborative process and kind of placing the vision of Puppy in the kind of hands of another?
Jacek did a bunch of videos for our friend Martin Hadley, who's an old friend, and we're all big fans of his music. And he did a couple of videos that we were really impressed with. And we met Jacek through Martin, kind of on the back of that. And I made a video for, you know, Green Lung, mm-hmm. who Will actually sort of, well, discovered for us. And we went on tour with a few years ago. And they're kind of, I like to think of them as friends of the band. Like they're really lovely guys and we're big fans of their music. So Jacek and I worked on that and it was very harmonious. And I think we just had so much going on going into this album campaign, so many videos to do and the artwork to finish and all this kind of stuff that we were a little bit pushed for time anyway. And then I'd seen that Jacek was doing these quite bonkers animations and I'm still not actually sure exactly how he did them. So basically the process that we had was we would send him raw footage of kind of gothic, weird, on brand, pure evil universe stuff, which he would then glitch and abstract and do all this weird stuff to. And we were kind of going back and forth in that way with him sending us these little warped versions of our images back. And it kind of just went like that. And I think Jacek came to see Puppy in about 2015. He's like, I don't know if he likes us anymore, but he was definitely used to be a fan of the band before he actually met us. So I think felt like it made sense. But yeah, maybe it was kind of weird handing over that control, but I think we all found it quite an exciting process actually. And he actually shot the and watched it glow video. He was the cameraman on that and he did a great job.
He's not the one in the Plague Doctor outfit then.
I think that was me, wasn't it?
No, that was Brian Blessed. We had a lot of things.
Yeah, he did an uncredited role.
Anthony Hopkins played the bunny. And he was sadly quite...
Oh, we missed a trick. We should have done like the most ridiculous credits at the end.
Director's cut. It's all right.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been amazing.
So, something that I've always loved about Puppy is what almost like a refusal to take things too seriously. And I mean that in the best possible way. You know, it's so refreshing because as brilliant as it is, that we're kind of in an era where some bands have such a strong kind of visual aesthetic that they like to uphold, I think it can sometimes be taken a bit too seriously. It's almost like the kind of music equivalent of like method acting.
Yeah.
How important is it for you guys to be able to lace what you do with that? It feels like a very sort of self-aware sense of humor sometimes.
I think whenever you see people, I think, like who are very much like behaving on brand or whatever, like in terms of, you know, they're a heavy band and they're going like, you know, yeah, this album's the craziest album we've ever made in our lives, like what a dickhead. Like it's just ridiculous. Like I don't know, I said that one yeah, I don't know, I just think the reality of like being in a band is just like, you know, traveling around in vans occasionally and taking time off work. I just think someone acting like a Liam Gallagher while they're doing it is pretty fucking ridiculous.
Unless that person is Liam Gallagher, which
unless you're Liam Gallagher, which case it's fine. But
we've always said that, you know, we all love heavy music and classic rock, but I think, and much as we love playing it and everything, we've always felt slightly like tourists in that realm, or like we don't quite belong. We're not those tough guys, and we're kind of the opposite of that in many ways. So I think we always wanted the band and the brand, even if we can call it that, to kind of reflect that in some way, and to maybe acknowledge how kind of silly it is to be in a sort of metal band in 2022 and write songs about fucking castles and goblins and stuff. But which actually, I don't think you've ever written a song about a goblin, have you, Jock?
Not yet.
It's on the list. A lot is for the Babbling Brook.
My side project.
Babbling Brook.
Me dressed as a witch, dressed as a witch doctor on the front.
I can't let you guys go today without talking about the upcoming UK tour. 15 dates, all going down in May. When you guys were touring the Goat, and I think even prior to releasing the Goat, you treated us to the fake pyro and a little bit of, you know, a little bit of a production. Not necessarily, you know, shirts off looking ripped with tribal tattoos, but we'll take it. What can we expect to see on tour evil, as I believe you're calling it? Can we see some, maybe like a giant lava lamp, or, you know?
I really want to get you one of those. You know, there's like those balls where you touch it and it looks like they're like plasma balls or something.
I've got one of those. Yeah.
Yeah. I love the idea of like just occasionally walking over to it and putting my hand on it and like looking like I'm getting electrocuted. Like, then come back and being like, no, I can continue. You know, like old James Brown performances where he would get to a point where he'd kind of collapse. Mm. And like someone would come out and put a cape over him,
and they'd like go to revive him, but with the funk.
Yeah, well, no, they'd go to take him off the stage, and he'd be like shambling off stage. Then he'd be like, "No!" And then like throw the cape off and go walk back to the mic, and the audience would be like, "Yeah."
Do you think that was just a ruse by which he could take more drugs? They put the thing over his head, and he was
probably he's just shambling and then it actually just would like bring him back from the edge. He'd be like, "Oh yes, okay, I'm back, baby."
What else did we get? What are those? You know those things that are like inverted nails and they will leave an impression of your hand or your face?
Yeah.
Maybe we could have a few of those, and every now and then you just kind of do your face, maybe sticking your tongue out and hold it up to the audience. That could be cool.
That'd be amazing.
If only Hawkins Bazaar was still a business.
What's Hawkins? What's Hawkins Bazaar?
They were like those like the shops where you got all the weird like things like lava lamps.
It's like the gadget shop.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, okay. I get you.
That's what we're the gadget shop.
Yeah, our whole tour aesthetic is based off the gadget shop, actually. We're going to have lots of disguised CCTV cameras. There's going to be some tiny drones just hovering above the audience, kind of menacingly. Yeah.
That'd be cool. Yeah.
Not actually doing anything. Maybe some Nerf guns.
Nerf guns. Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah, have fun with some of those water snakes. Just, you know, chucking them out.
You know, those balls.
You'd be like, open these, guys. It's just a normal tub of jelly beans.
Yeah.
You have to get them to all open it at the exact same time, otherwise the surprise would be ruined.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
People would decline to open the remaining snake.
Well, that guy had snakes in his, but maybe these ones are normal. Oh no!
You get a jelly bean. You get a jelly bean.
Oh man, yeah, I'm so sad that the tour is not going to be nearly as good as what we've just said.
Yeah. I mean, it's just not worth it now, is it? Just, you know.
No, yeah, let's cancel it.
we've given away the jelly bean secret, but there's still time. But we're not going to tell you if there's anything like that coming up now, because we're going to spoil it.
It's all right. Yeah, and we'll completely forget the fact that you said don't say this on the record, but we've got a bunch of silly putty. We're going to hand out to the crowd little pots of silly putty, and they'll all have to stick their fingers in it and make the sort of putty noise,
make the fart.
Yeah,
well, I'll conduct it like Danny Elfman, topless at the front of the stage.
Yeah, it's right before Billy's. It's right before Billy's drums come in on Entombed.
I've actually got rid of my eye spells and my splashes. And
no.
I've just got tubs of the putty, and before the beatdown section, I just go with the sticks and leave the sticks implanted there. That'd be fucking dope. Or like whoopee cushions under the armpit and shit.
Whoopee cushions would be a nice touch. Branded whoopee cushions. Like, we get, I'm sure we get them printed up.
Oh, man.
We've missed another fucking
track. You've got to be able to do that. Yeah. There we go.
It's pretty on brand. We did give out Silly String once.
Little prankster's kit. Love it.
Naughtiest boys in the business, mate.
Yeah, where my prankster's at?
Yeah, original pranksters right here. Yeah. Featuring Redman.
Speaking of which, I've got to let you guys go in a minute, but you know, while you're out on the tour, for old time's sake, will we see one more round of the infamous puppy tour game that is Sock Norton?
We may.
What is Sock Norton? Remind me.
It's when you, when I'm distracted doing something else, you just place a sock on my shoulder.
Oh, I totally forgot about that, man. Man, thank you so much. Yeah. I forgot about Sock Norton.
Mm.
Oh,
good job, Dylan.
I'll carry that sock with me to the grave.
He still wakes up in a cold sweat thinking about
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing how quickly I could have a sock on my shoulder, notice it, get angry at Billy, turn around, and then there'd instantly be a sock on my shoulder again. The windows of time just got smaller and smaller. I think I just started leaving it on there after a while.
Yeah, you made a feature of it. Your guitar strap is just several socks tied together.
That would be amazing.
And that is the third episode of Escape Artists in the Can. Not the shit can, the other can, the good can. Yeah, that's it. That's done. Thank you so much to Jock, Billy and Will from Puppy for their time. Additional thanks also go to Matt and Holly at Good As Gold, as well as Paola at Rude Records. And whoever the poor person was sat next door to me while I was in my office with the paper thin walls while I recorded this on my lunch break at work, bless them. Pure Evil is the title of Puppy's new album. It's coming out May 6th and you can pre-order it now by heading to ruderecords.com/shop. I'll stick a link in the bio for this episode. The album is available on a couple of different vinyl variants and CD. And there's also some merch for sale. So there's t-shirts, there's long sleeves, there's hoodies, and there's even a scent of pure evil in the form of a candle. If you're listening to this after the 6th of May, then you can do all of that anyway. Just replace the word pre-order with the word order. or you can check the album out wherever you get your music, so long as the platform you use is legit. I mean, don't be a dickhead now. I'll also stick some links in the description of this episode for the videos that we discussed during the podcast. The utterly ridiculous video for And Watched It Glow, which you heard a snippet of just now, as well as Jacek Smarz's insane video for The Kiss. Both well worth your time. And don't forget, Puppy are heading out on tour across the UK this month, May 2022. They are playing loads of places, so go and look at where they're playing. Maybe head down to a show, throw the horns, do a square dance, do whatever it is you groovy dudes do at gigs these days. Right, that's it for another episode of the pod. Thanks for joining me. I'll try not to leave it another 6 months before the next one. I highly doubt it, seeing as things like gigs and festivals are finally back in our lives. And while I remain skeptical and cautious about, you know, things like COVID, nature seems to be healing. I know the world has never felt more like a crazy place to be at the moment, but at least we've got some great music and some great films, which I will be discussing more in depth soon, I promise. I know it's been very music heavy for starters, but we will be getting into all sorts of art that we can all escape to. That's what we do as escape artists. And on that note, we're out of here.